All right. Well, hey, welcome, everybody. You can go ahead and have a seat. And let me just be the first to welcome you this morning to the new CrossPoint Launchpad. How about that? Very excited that you're here this morning. We've been across the street at Fall Creek Intermediate School for the last 7 years. And after a long, long construction process, we're very excited to welcome you here this morning. And my name's Kurt Walters, by the way. I'm what they call a pastor here at CrossPoint, which is really odd for me to say because I never planned to be a pastor. In fact, I don't even know how I got here. I grew up on the east side of Indianapolis, and then later on in my growing up years, moved to Battle Creek, Michigan. And I had a great childhood. And if you would have told me when I was a kid that I would actually graduate from high school and then graduate from college, and then I'd have the opportunity to lead an organization like CrossPoint, I would have been like, actually graduated from high school? Wow, all right, that so wasn't me, you know? And so, you know, super excited you're here. And if you're here for the first time this morning, let me say I'm 41 years old. I'm married to my beautiful wife, Julie. We together have 4 children. Macy is 12. Our son, Matt, is 10. Maggie is 7, and Meredith is 4. And it makes me tired just telling you that. And, you know, we have great kids. We love our kids. They're the greatest thing that ever happened to Julie and I. And I love being a dad. It's, you know, it's one of my great things. And speaking of parents, in fact, my mom and dad are both here today, Jim and Michelle Walters, and my grandparents. And I just want to thank you. I don't know if my wife's parents are here. I know they're coming, Ron and Martha Macy. But you all have been very influential in our lives and shaping us and growing us. And Mom and Dad, I just hope you're proud of us today. In fact, I know you're proud of us. I mean, you're probably a little more than even when I graduated high school, you know, because that was a big deal. So behind me, we have the most talented band in the land, PJ Talon, the CrossPoint Band. Let's hear for the band this morning. They bring it every single weekend. And you're going to love these guys. And in fact, if you don't already love them, I mean, you guys can do anything. Like
We try.
Like, we go from, like, Willie Nelson to
Katy Perry.
And U2 to
Leonard Skinner.
I mean, you know, we're talking Guns N' Roses. I mean, you can do it all. You're going to love these guys. And in fact, PJ is our creative director here at CrossPoint. And came on board early on, very beginning to CrossPoint. And everything you see creative around here, media, music, comes from PJ and his team. And, you know, PJ and his wife, Angie, they have a wonderful family, 2 children. PJ grew up here on the north side of Indianapolis his whole life. Yep. And so it's a privilege to have you here. In fact, let me just say, CrossPoint wouldn't be where it is today without you. So thank you. PJ brings a ton to CrossPoint. Down here to my left is somebody you're going to meet in a little bit. This is our connections director and sidekick, Eric Butchtenkirk. And you're going to see him in a moment.
Sidekick.
He hails from the Chicagoland area. And he and his wonderful wife, Julie, then spent time out in Sacramento about 4 or 5 years ago, made their way back here to the Midwest, to Fishers. They live here with their wonderful family. They've got really, really cool kids. And funny thing, I've been told recently that the best leadership move I ever made was bringing Eric on our staff team. So, Eric, thank you for making me look like a great leader. It's wonderful. I appreciate that. Now, this is a big moment in the history of CrossPoint, and I grew up going to church. And yet, like church, and yet a number of years ago, I began to realize that a lot of the people I cared a lot about, my friends, some of our neighbors, didn't really like church the way I like church. And that began to kind of bother me. And so my wife and I, we began to just kind of dream and say, what would it look like to create a church that's wired start to finish for people who don't like church? And, you know, what would it look like to have a place where it's okay not to have it all together, where you can come and just explore Jesus at his own pace? And so, I wake up every day, you know, and I'm just overwhelmed at times that I actually get to do this. All right? I mean, I don't have to do this. I actually get to do this, and it's a privilege, and, you know, we hope you like it. In fact, if you're for the first time, we hope you like it. We try to bring the best we can, and as a result of that, hope that people see Jesus for who he really is. So, a couple things are going to happen every week when we're in this room. You know, we do a few songs like we just did on the front end. Sometimes you're going to know the words, sometimes you're not. They're real catchy songs. You're going to catch on right away. And then Eric's going to come up, and he's going to talk about community stuff and things going on here at CrossPoint. He's going to fill some cards out, and he and PJ are going to dialogue about the events of the day and, you know, sports, and they're going to digress way off topic, as they always do. And then we bring it back in, and then, you know, usually Eric will throw it to, like, a song you've heard on the radio, or maybe a scene from a popular movie or television show to just kind kind of connect with the theme of the day. And then I'm going to get up and talk after that. And I do that about 40, 42 times a year. The other weeks of the year, I have a teaching team that teaches here. And we call it a teaching here at Crosspoint. You know, some churches call that segment a sermon. I don't think my theology professors would agree that it's called a sermon when I deliver it. So, you know, it's like a teaching. It's like a learning experience. We're going for the full life learning experience. And then after that, we have a few more songs that we do that just kind of help you connect with God, but also send you out of here maybe motivated to make a change or even to just realize that our main role is to be a blessing. And then after that, we're going to send you out to pick up your kids. Make sure you pick those up if you brought them. They're good things to take home with you. And then, by the way, one other thing you're going to hear a few times this morning is this thing we refer to around here as the joy box. And every time, you know, somebody says the word joy box, that happens right there. And that's because those receptacles are intended for people who are financially fueling what God's doing here at Crosspoint. And so you know, we just get crazy excited about being generous with our time and our treasure. And so those are outside the doors, on the outsides of the doors as you walk out today. So that's kind of what we do around here. We hope you like it this morning if it's your first time with us today. And PG, what do you say we get after it and just go again. Well, hey, great to have you here today for our opening series, Heavyweights, and we're going to be taking a look at these major conflicts that, knocked my mic back off. It's a new thing. These major conflicts that take place in our faith that cause us to kind of have these moments where we maybe question or we doubt that God exists. Maybe we doubt whether the Bible is really real when we read certain things about history and we read certain things in the Bible. Maybe whether even the Bible is relevant or not. And so today, we're going to be taking a look at how what the record says about history and how that compares to the Bible. And so today we're going to put our thinking caps on. Some people think that when you come to church, you check your brain at the door. You have to do that to have faith. No, we believe God gave us our brains. And so we're going to dive into some data. We're going to dive into some quotes and all kinds of material that probably you have not experienced in other venues. And so today we're going to be taking a look and just asking God to move in our hearts and more importantly in our minds this morning. So let's pray and ask him to do that. God, I'm thankful we can come into this place and we thank you for this place. And we thank you that you gave us brains and that you've given us brains that are actually to operate properly. And you're there to have the right input and the right output. And so help us to honor the intelligence that we have in this room today. And I pray that you'd help us to develop our intelligence as a result today, and more importantly, to develop our hearts in the process. God, I just pray that you help me to be clear, and I pray these things in your name and according to your character, Jesus. Amen. Well, as we get started today, let me give a little bit of context for the series and kind of where we're going. And the big question is, who are we trying to answer questions for today and over these next few weeks? And the book of Deuteronomy chapter 4 actually helps us answer this. Here's what it says. It says, "Seek the Lord your God, and you will find him if you search after him with all of your heart and with all of your soul. When you're in tribulation and all of these things will come upon you in the latter days, you will return to the Lord your God and obey his voice." So Deuteronomy chapter 4 says that we are to seek the Lord, and our hope is in the midst of some of our questions, in the midst of some of our doubts, even our uncertainties, that we're in a posture of seeking. And so if you're coming here today, you know, with a posture of being a cynic, and you're hoping that you can prove that you know more than me, you're likely going to win, all right? I mean, I'm not going to be able to combat that. If you are here today and you're trying to see if the Bible is actually valid or trying to make arguments against the Bible, I'm sure there's all kinds of data you're going to find to support that. I'm not really going to be able to address that today, but for those of us who are truly in a posture of seeking, of being lookers, of being questioners, and trying to say, okay, what exactly does the Bible say? I think we're really going to connect and grow through this. And one of the things we have to realize is none of us come into this place with a blank slate. Even though we like to think we're objective, in reality, we're not. We're all an amalgamation of our background. We're all an amalgamation of our family of origin. We're an amalgamation of our culture of origin. And it's amazing how we view things differently. You can give two people the same amount of data, and in the end, they can have two totally separate conclusions. I mean, it's fascinating that this happens, and this is because of what we refer to as our worldview. And so if you're not familiar with worldview, I went to the amazingly accurate source on the internet known as Wikipedia and got this great definition. Here's what the worldview is. It's a comprehensive worldview is the fundamental cognitive orientation of an individual or society encompassing the entirety of the individual or society's knowledge and point of view. A worldview can include natural philosophy, fundamental, existential, and normative postulates, or themes, values, emotions, and ethics. And so the worldview, in a sense, is kind of the filter through which we see the world. It's the way in which we interpret information. It's in a sense, kind of like the earmuffs over our ears that filter the data we take in, and we make decisions and come to conclusions on. And again, it's fascinating. You can give, you know, two individuals the same presidential debate, and they will walk out thinking a different person won. I mean, it's amazing. They'll think, well, this person said this better. And that's just a way that illustrates that we all have a different worldview. And when it comes to the Bible, we have a worldview. And the worldview of our, you know, Western American culture is very different than the worldview of the ancient Middle Eastern culture in which the Bible was written, or even the Middle Eastern culture of today. And so one of the things that really characterizes our American Western worldview is we're very individualistic and very relativistic. What do I mean by that? That means that, you know, we live in a culture where we believe the individual should be exalted in all costs. I mean, I should go out and I need to take care of myself first, and I just understand that your role is to naturally take care of yourself first. We also live in a relativistic culture, which is kind of this, well, you know, there's certain truths that I live by, but I don't necessarily expect you to live by those truths, and you shouldn't expect me to live by the things that you guide your life by. And what's fascinating about this is if you go to any other culture of the world outside our Western culture, they'd be like, man, that is crazy. What do you mean you just kind of, what are you talking about? You know, there are certain things that are right. There are certain things that are wrong. And this is why, you know, when you look at the divorce rate in America today, it's why 50% of all new marriages end in divorce. You know, it's because, you know, our worldview informs that. You know, it's individualistic. And if your marriage isn't working for you, or if you guys disagree on something, you're like, well, I'm just going to leave. That's what I do. That's what our worldview in the Western culture tells us. And yet, other cultures of the world, they'd never think that. They'd say, no, it's all about the community. I mean, you stay and you work it out because when the marriage fails, the community suffers. When the marriage fails, everybody suffers. And I'm not trying to make an argument for one side or the other. I'm just trying to illustrate that we come at this differently based on our world view. So when we come to things like philosophy and spirituality and religion and the Bible, our world view just naturally kicks in. And I want you to think about this with me for a moment. I mean, where else do we see this? All right, I mean, if any of us go to an accountant, I mean, if your accountant were to say to you, well, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, for some people, debits are debits, but I just don't get that. I mean, I don't follow those rules. I mean, when I'm doing your taxes, I kind of, at the moment, decide how I'm feeling, if that should be a debit or a credit. And you're like, no, I want an accountant that actually knows how to do accounting, that understands debits and credits, right? Who knows, just decide that at the moment. Or I don't know if you've ever talked to an electrician that said that, you know, something like, well, I just don't believe in grounding. I mean, you know, the verdict's out on that for me. You know, I mean, sometimes I'll ground, sometimes I won't. I mean, the whole even positive negative thing, I don't really dig that. I mean, you're like, no, I want an electrician that understands reality, that gets this deal. And so in no other sector of life do we say, oh man, well, whatever you think, I mean, there's certain truths that can guide you, but I'm going to live by these truths. No, you know, but when it comes to the Bible, it's kind of like all bets are out. Right? I mean, well, you know, man, I don't know. I mean, let's just all follow our own ideas. And so, you know, I think the scripture really kind of speaks to this. And I actually want us to look at this morning in round number one. So let's get into round number one. There we go, round one. All right, we're going to look at tactile evidence in archaeology. This is round one. And one of the things I want to look at today is some questions that I usually get when we're dealing with these issues. And so one of the questions I often will hear from people when they're trying to validate or wonder if they can believe the Bible or not is, times have changed, and so does that mean parts of the Bible should be interpreted differently, or does everything hold true regardless of how times have changed? And it's going to sound like I kind of cop out on this answer a little bit, but I'm not. All right, see, the problem is that we live in a soundbite culture. All right, we live by sound bites. And you may not get the sound bite you want, and so you go and just look for another sound bite, or you may not understand the sound bite that you get. And I can't really give you a sound bite answer to this because it's going to depend on the issue. All right, everybody that has any worldview, which is all of us, regardless of what culture you come from, what time in the history of the world you've come from, understands that there are certain parts of the Bible to be taken literally, there's certain parts of the Bible that are taken figuratively, and then there are certain, you know, parts of the Bible that are taken culturally. And of course, the big question when it comes to the Bible is which issues fall into each of these categories? And what's fascinating is that has to be done on a case-by-case basis. And of course, the way I categorize a particular issue may not be the way you categorize a particular issue. And so, you know, one of the things we have to wrestle through when it comes to the Bible is say, you know, if I'm going to embrace this, then you know, if there's a God that was in the past in history, and there's a God of the present, then there's a God that's still speaking into the future, then I have to kind of get to the place where I'm comfortable adhering to things that I'm not comfortable with. Right, there's certain things I might hear from the Bible that I just don't like. I want to throw it out. I'm like, well, that's just a cultural thing. I don't have to do that. And so anything we don't like, we're like, well, that's figurative. It wasn't really intended, you know, for us to apply it to our lives. No, we have to get comfortable that there might be things in the Bible that we don't like. All right, and so let's take a look at this. You know, evidence of through archaeology. How does this play out? A few months ago, I read an article, kind of getting ready for the football season, on Peyton Manning. It was in USA Today. And here's what it said. It said, for now, Peyton Manning will go down as an all-time great quarterback who came up small when the stakes were the biggest. What a bummer that Super Bowl was, right, last year. Not just because the Broncos lost, but because it was just a bummer of a game. You know, there may come a time in the future where American football as we know it no longer exists. I mean, it'd be a bummer of a day, but it may happen, all right? It may happen where there's a time where nobody knows who Peyton Manning is, right? And in a millennium into the future, you know, all of a sudden somebody unearths the USA Today in somebody's attic, and they're like, oh my word, look, there used to be this thing called American football. And there was a guy named Peyton Manning. You ever heard of Peyton Manning? No, never heard of Peyton Manning. Well, he actually played American football. And now the information in that paper may not be completely accurate, because let's say 5 years from now, Peyton wins another Super Bowl. And so he gets that indictment off his back that he never shows up and can get the big one, right? And so all I'm saying is, when archaeology moves in and begins to uncover certain things, there are, you know, all of a sudden we get certain insights into truth, and it validates things that have happened historically. And the crazy thing with the Bible is that the Bible can actually be validated archaeologically at an incredible rate. I mean, I don't even know that the Bible versus history is a heavyweight bout, if we're honest. And yet, every Easter, you get to Easter, and the main covers of all the big magazines, Time and Newsweek and all those, have to do with Jesus. And is he really who he said that he was? And you know what's fascinating about that? Have you ever seen a PBS special on the Quran and whether it's true or not? No, never. Have you ever seen a PBS special on the Book of Mormon and whether it's really accurate history? No, never. Why is that? I mean, why is it always refuting the Bible? It's like refuting the Bible has become our national history, you know, our national cultural norm here in the United States. Why is that? It's because the Bible is still standing, all right? And you can't refute something that doesn't continue to stand. And archaeology is one of the ways that we kind of validate this. You know, we read certain things in the Bible. And oftentimes we'll be like, well, man, there's some guy mentioned, especially when it comes to the Old Testament. We're like, man, we never hear ever again about this one mention of this name. And so unless we can validate that person actually lived, then it must just be a legend. That's often kind of how people, you know, approach that. They're trying to figure out if the Bible is actually accurate or not. And people say something like, you know, there's this king named Tiglath-Pileser, and he was a Syrian king, and we read about him one time in the Old Testament. And people are like, well, how do you know he exists? I mean, there's no other mention of him ever in any other document outside of this one time where it talks about him going toe-to-toe with the Israel nation and the kings of the Israel nation. And so people are like, well, you know, you can't validate that. That never happened. And what do you know? Back in 1847, archaeologists were digging and unearthed, as they found this kind of waste dump. They took this lid off this waste dump and found all of these bricks. And wouldn't you know it, in the back of these bricks were the name Tiglath-Pileser. this ancient king mentioned in way, 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 way back in the Old Testament. Apparently the dude like was this major building fund campaign raising dude, and he has an egomaniac, so he put his name on the back of every brick that he used to build his regime. Maybe I should do that someday. Next building we do, I put like my name stamped on every piece of like sheetrock that goes in the place. That would be against our principles here. But so all of a sudden, they unearth, archaeology unearthed something, and the issue isn't an issue anymore. Oh yeah, well we never hear about, you know, King Tilipleaser anymore, because archaeology has actually validated it. It's gone away. You know, take for instance the city of Jericho. All right, Jericho. Remember Joshua fighting the nation of Jericho, marching around the city, blowing the trumpets 7 times? People are like, man, that's a great Sunday school story. I mean, that's a great story for Saturday morning religious cartoons, as if, you know, anybody watches those. But listen, that didn't happen. Jericho never existed. There were no walls that came down after marching around it 7 times. And then what do you know? 1868, all of a sudden, the archaeologists unearth in the Middle East the city of Jericho. You can actually go see it today. In fact, this is what it looks like. The walls were crumbled. They found remnants of the walls actually on the ground that validates that Jericho actually was there. We have things in the New Testament. And sometimes, you know, it's like, well, the New Testament's a little newer, you know, and people are still like, well, I mean, if we don't see any validation of what happened outside of the Bible, then we can't really believe it. And the New Testament talks about there being a guy by the name of Pontius Pilate. And people are like, man, Pontius Pilate never existed. I mean, you know, Pontius Pilate was the guy who is kind of primarily known for crucifying Jesus, for putting Jesus on trial. And what do you know? Back in the 1960s, Italian archaeologists, they were in the Caesarean city around the Mediterranean Sea, and they unearthed this like 2x3 block that was actually a message from Pontius Pilate in Latin. In fact, what it says up there is this: Pontius Pilate, prefect of Judea, has presented the Tiberium to the Caesareans. Like, oh my word, Pontius Pilate actually existed. And so all of a sudden, nobody doubts Pontius Pilate anymore. I mean, it's like these things happened 1,800, 2,000 years ago, and yet even in the last number of years, we're unearthing things that continue to validate that the Bible actually is accurate. One person that's had a relatively dramatic conversion, you may know her, best-selling author, her name's Anne Rice. And, you know, she wrote this in her Vampire Diaries, and it's really fascinating. She's somebody who talks about her journey of going from believing to not believing. And as a result of that, she writes this book. I think it's called Out of Egypt, was this particular version. And in the back of this book, she gives all these post notes kind of to her writings, kind of these additional thoughts that she didn't include in the book. And she kind of chronicalized the early life of Jesus, because the Bible's pretty silent when it comes to the early life of Jesus. And this long quote, I think, is very pertinent for us with this series today. Here's what she said. She said, I saw almost no skeptical scholarship that was convincing, and the gospel shredded by critics lost all intensity when reconstructed by various theorists. They were in no way compelling when treated as composites of and records of later communities. Many of these scholars who apparently devoted their life to New Testament scholarship, disliked Christ. Some pitted him as a hopeless failure. Others sneered at him, and some felt an outright contempt. This came between the lines of the books. This emerged in the personality of the texts. I'd never come across this kind of emotion in any other field of research, at least not to this extent. It was puzzling. The people who go into Elizabethan studies don't set out to prove that Queen Elizabeth I was a fool. They don't personally dislike her. They don't make snickering remarks about her or spend their careers trying to pick apart her historical reputation. And yet this is what happens today with the Bible all the time. And yet the Bible is still standing. I mean, what book could possibly endure the endless criticism and still be standing? I mean, you know, take the Book of Mormon, for instance. I don't mean to disrespect, you know, anyone who follows that faith. I'm just saying that you never hear somebody say, well, you know, they've never found this tribe in Northern America, the melding of this North American tribe with the nation of Israel DNA. You just never hear anybody questioning that. And yet that's what's in that context. And I mean, it's like the Bible and Jesus are always open game for being refuted all the time. I mean, and it's not like I'm, like, defensive about it or anything. Like, oh, why are they always picking on the Bible? You know, remember that old song? Remember that old, like, yeah, right there. Remember that? What? I mean, it's not like we're like, why is everybody always picking on me? You know, it's actually a cool thing. Props to our tech team for that this morning. Yeah. That was good. You know, I actually get excited that the Bible gets refuted. You know why? Because with all of the critical scholarship, the Bible is still standing because there's something beautiful about history when it's validated. All right, let's go to round number two. Yeah, there we go. A little slow on the bell there. Round number two. All right, round number two. We're going to look at, data from societies and people, individuals, all right? One of the big questions and that comes up socially, again, kind of goes back to the previous question, is that I answer a lot of times, people that kind of refute the Bible or aren't sure the Bible's accurate or is it really something that's relevant today, is people say, you know, why does it seem that God, the church, the Bible, don't see men and women as equals? That everything is male-based, which is a fascinating question. And I think the bigger issue here is sometimes there's this popular belief that the Bible historically is at odds with the liberation of women, even the liberation of slaves. And historically, that's just simply not true. But from the first look, you might think that. And so talking worldview, if we go back to the ancient texts, things that that were said about women, you're never going to find the Bible say something in the way we want it to be said in our Western American culture because it just didn't happen that way. And part of the reason for that is because every ancient culture where the Bible was penned was actually male-dominated. And every single solitary one, and we're looking for this nice pithy statement from Jesus where, you know, he just says, hey, men and women are both equal, and they're hard to find, and yet at the same time, we see crazy, crazy amounts of moments and stories where Jesus is exalting women and giving value to women over and over and over again. In fact, one of them was a time when Jesus was talking with a woman at this well. He ran into this woman, and she had this very sordid sexual past. And he's talking to her, and he finds out that she's had all these adulterous affairs, and you know she's been married, and now she's living with a guy and having sex with a guy she's not married to. And as a result of this, Jesus is talking to her, and they have this interaction. Then they leave the well, and here's what his disciples say after he walks away from her in John 4. It says, just then, his disciples came back, and they marveled that he was talking with, what's it say right there? A woman. They didn't marvel that he was talking with somebody with a sordid sexual past. It says they marveled that he was actually talking to a woman. Why is that? It's because men didn't talk to women in that society, at least publicly. I mean, they just didn't. I mean, Jesus is actually publicly affirming the intelligence of women right here. And this is a massive bombshell right here for those who think, well, the Bible just never validates women. So we actually see Jesus in healthy relationships with women, all right, relationships with other women, such as Mary Magdalene. And sometimes people are like, well, why didn't Jesus have one of the 12 or one of the 11 disciples? Why wasn't one of those a woman? And so you have to understand the cultural context that, again, back in that day, that just wouldn't have worked for him. Nobody would have taken him seriously if he had a woman as part of his inside 12. He had to kind of pick his hills and pick his battles, and yet at the same time, we see Jesus valuing women. Mary Magdalene, I mean, this is somebody who, when skeptics talk about Mary Magdalene, when Jesus talks about Mary Magdalene, they're like, well, you know, Jesus and Mary Magdalene, I mean, we all know they were kind of like, hur. You know, they're like, you know, on the side, like, had a little thing going on, but, you know, which is interesting, because why do we think that? Why do we naturally think that there must have been something sexual going on? That is actually our American Western worldview coming in thinking, well, Jesus surely couldn't have had a relationship with a woman that wasn't sexual. No, he actually did. Her name was Mary Magdalene. And so, you know, this is what we see exhibited in, you know, kind of lifted up in Galatians chapter 3, where the Apostle Paul says, there's no Jew, there's neither Jew nor Greek nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. See, something we have to realize is that wherever the Bible goes into, any of the cultures the Bible goes into in the world, listen, every single time, and as a communicator, I probably shouldn't say this morning, I'm going to say it anyway. Every single time a Bible goes into a culture, the status of women is always elevated. Always elevated. Every single time. Like, this is one of the reasons is that there are still cultures in our world where the Bible is illegal. Because the leaders of those cultures and societies don't want women seeing that they were actually valued. Every single time the Bible goes into a culture or civilization, women are always elevated. And this is the same with slavery. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, and there are obviously people, you know, that believe in the Bible that also throughout the course of human history have believed in slavery and, you know, had slaves. It's awful. It's awful, which just leads us to believe that, you know, and to know that just because you believe the Bible doesn't mean you always do the right thing. Just because you hold a leadership position in a church or, represent, you know, Christ doesn't mean you're always doing the right thing. So you can make the Bible to say whatever you want it to say, but it doesn't say whatever you want it to say. And slavery is a great example of that. See, nowhere in the Bible is there a hint of embracing, you know, people being kidnapped and put into slavery against their will. We read in the scriptures this thing called a debtor's slave, which is where I voluntarily agree to work for you because I owe you a debt, and so I'm going to work my debt off. But nowhere in the scriptures do we see anything embraced around the idea of kidnapping people and enslaving them. You know, it's interesting because a number of years ago, Julie and I used to go down to Pendleton Reformatory on Friday evenings. That's how we spent our Friday nights. It's a great date night, by the way. And we go in and we'd interact with some of the inmates at Pendleton. And there was one particular guy by the name of Carl, and he professed he was a black Muslim. And nearly every time I talked to him, he'd say, Kurt, I want to know something. He'd say, I want to know, do you call yourself a Christian or do you call yourself an American? And I'm like 20 years old at the time, right? So I'm like, well, gosh, I'm both. I mean, I'm a Christian and American. He's like, well, you know, then you got to be one or the other, because if you call yourself a Christian, your people actually enslave my people. And if you say that's okay, then I can't believe in your Bible. I'm like, wow, that's a really good thought. I never thought that in my first 20 years. And as I started wrestling through that, I thought, you know, there's a lot of people that have believed in the Bible, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they did the right thing. In fact, early American history, and this isn't a Christian thing, you know, slavery was something unfortunate. It's a part of our American history. And I think this is why Paul talked about this in Galatians, where he said there's neither slave nor free. Because, you know, all the abolitionists I've read and heard of, all were driven by Scripture. Every single one of them. You've heard of people like Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman, she said, you know, I must go down like Moses into Egypt to lead them out. You know, William Wilberforce, who was one of the big abolitionists in England, who kind of spent his entire fortune, you know, spent himself physically because he was driven by the scriptures to abolish slavery, to create emancipation for slaves in England. And as a result of that, it began to, you know, trickle over to the United States and created the emancipation of slaves in the United States. People like Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, he was driven by the scriptures. And you know, and we have other things that are driven by the scriptures, things like hospitals, you know, taking care of the least of these is where hospitals began to spring up from, because we're called as people who believe in the Bible to actually care for people. You know, orphanages. I mean, there's tons of people here at Cross Point that take in orphans, that take in foster children, that adopt children. In fact, my wife grew up in a family where they had foster children all through her growing up years. Why do people do this? They're driven by the scriptures. Social workers, judges, you know, foster parents. Why is that? I think it's because of what we see in James chapter 1. James 1 says this. It says, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction. I mean, we look at things like science. I mean, I think you're going to be really fascinated here in a couple weeks when we look at science, and we realize that, you know, science is very chummy with the Bible. I mean, you know, people like Galileo, who years ago were criticized by the official church, you know, people that believed in the Bible criticized him because he was just looking at data. He was just saying, you know, I'm not sure that the earth is the center of everything. I'm not sure the sun actually revolves around the earth. People like disowned him out of the faith because he was the scriptures actually motivated him to dive in and try to understand creation in a deeper way. And he found nothing within the scriptures that violated or contradicted that. Crazy thing about Bible and history is, you know, how many of us in here right now would say, man, if it wasn't for the fact that the Bible says X, Y, and Z, man, I'd have no idea where my life would be right now. I mean, man, if it wasn't that the Bible said, you know, man, Kurt, you're to lay your life down for your wife, where would my marriage be right now? Or, you know, I have no idea where my family would be or my kids would be, you know, if it wasn't for the Bible giving me a very strong patriarchal image of a loving God who also brings discipline. I don't know where my kids would be if I didn't have that picture. I mean, I don't know where this church would be if we didn't hear, you know, words from the scripture about being a blessing to the community, about saying one of our primary purposes here is to be a blessing to everyone who's around us, or dealing with things like coming up against poverty. I mean, the Bucket Project. I mean, where would our culture be if there was nobody to put clothes on kids who couldn't get themselves up and out of poverty because we know that education is the lever that makes that happen? I mean, you know, where would the world be without the scriptures? I think history would look a lot different. That means, I guess, I'm done. All right, so if you want to dive into this more, a book I'd recommend, written by an award-winning journalist from U.S. News and World Report, Jeffrey Scheller, a great book called Is the Bible True? In fact, this is one of your next steps on the back of your connection card, if you want to go ahead and take those out. If this is intriguing to you and you struggle and have doubts about whether God exists and whether the Bible is true, this would be a great book for you to pick up this week. You can pick it up on Amazon. And as you're taking your cards out, every week we do some next steps. We kind of give you a few, you know, walkout points of what am I going to do with what I've heard this morning? And I know this lands in a lot of different places this morning. So I want you to think about this for a moment. You know, what if I said to you right now, hey, in my backyard, I've got a mint condition Honus Wagner baseball card. You'd be like, didn't that sell for like $3 million last March or something? And you're a pastor? I don't think so. And why we're talking about it, I've got it, all right? And what we're talking about, if you go to Northern California and visit the sequoias out there, if you go to the tallest sequoia, there's a nest up in that tree, and you're going to find an unhatched pterodactyl egg. You're going to be like, really now? Are you serious? You know, here's the thing. If I were to tell you those things, from that point forward, you would be like, anything Kurt tells me, I'm checking out. It's not true. I mean, if I were to come to you and be like, hey, let me give you some parenting advice or some marriage advice, you're like, aren't you the guy that thinks he has a Honus Wagner baseball card? You know, or if I came to you, I'm like, hey, if you're interested in making an investment, here's you know, one of the best investment strategies I've discovered. You're like, yeah, aren't you the guy that thinks there's still a pterodactyl egg, you know, in Northern California somewhere? I mean, I'd be totally discounted, right? But let's just say generations from now, right, a millennia into the future, that there's some big new development in Fishers, Indiana, and you've moved away from here, but you see it in the news, and they go to the backyard of Kurt Walters, and they start unearthing and digging, and they find a box with a Honus Wagner baseball card. And people are like, oh my word, we wondered where that went. How'd you get that? And let's just say that, you know, an earthquake, you know, hits Northern California, God forbid. And then these giant sequoias fall over, and out from one of the nests in the top rolls a pterodactyl egg. Be like, oh my word, could you believe it? We had no idea. They're like, no, there's a guy named Kurt Walters. He called it. He knew it. He said it. You know what you'd be doing? You'd be like, what else did he say? What else did he know about? See, this is what the Bible does for us. And I know it throws things out, and there are people for a long time that have been like, man, that's crazy stuff. Those are just legends. Right, there's a lot of difficulties in wrestling through the scriptures. I get that. I'm not saying the Bible's an easy book to believe. You know, what I'm saying is, as we continue through history, it becomes more and more validated that what took place is actually accurate. And if that's the case, well, that changes everything. And so the band's going to do a song. And as they sing this song, they just talks, you know, kind of prompts some of these ideas of what does it mean to trust and really, you know, God, can I really put the weight of my life in what you and who you say you are? I want you to just kind of process through these next steps and just ask God, say, God, what's my next step? And regardless of where you are in your spiritual journey, it doesn't matter if you've been walking with God for 20 years or you're, you know, just beginning to check this Jesus thing out because you heard, you know, Cross Point has good coffee and you thought you'd come walk in. You know, I don't know. Wherever you are on the spectrum, God, what would it look like, you know, for me to take my next step? Maybe it's coming back next week. Maybe it's getting that book. You know, is the Bible true? Maybe it's beginning to go through this week and say, okay, God, I'm really going to wrestle through my posture. Am I really in a posture of seeking to see if what you say is actually accurate? So as the band sings, mark your next step.